Hoffman, Mr. Price.
Sure, and I understand we've got about 5 hours for this.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll keep this brief. Obviously, happy to answer any questions, but we'll keep our comments relatively brief here. We're here to discuss the proposed structure of our liquidity program. This, as you'll recall, is the cornerstone of the new asset allocation and portfolio construction process. The board adopted this back September 30th last year. We've talked about asset allocation in December and March of this year. It'll go through the process of how we found these managers, but I'll cut to the chase. We're proposing a structure of three managers. This program is intended to provide the cash match payment stream to meet our liabilities. The board selected 48 months, so we've sized the program to 48 months of benefit payments. That gets drawn down over the course of the year and refreshed every year. The solution that we're proposing today is a multi-manager structure, three managers, Insight, DFA, and SIT Investments. What we looked for in this process was the quality of the actual investment process, the quality of the client service. Obviously, to the extent we could find fail-safes between the managers, that was bonus territory, and I think we found that, and we've put together what we believe to be a very robust and resilient structure that meets everything we set out. And actually, we went back to the FFP white paper and said, is this consistent with the philosophy we laid out? It is. So we're happy on that front. You'll note that this is a lower cost structure than what we've had for our bond program in the past. We're paying about 22 basis points on our blended bonds right now. This goes to about 9 basis points, so a fairly dramatic reduction there. And I'm going to stop talking because I know you all are tired and probably getting hungry, and let Ed go over process, and I'll chime in along the way here.
Thanks, Tim.
There you go.
So, good morning, everyone. Good morning. So, good morning. I'd like to refer to the materials that you have, our bound copy, and I think we can skip ahead to page 8. So, the first several pages of that document are a bit of a recap from what you've seen from us before in terms of the process of the RFI and the RFP and all of the work up to present. So I don't think we need to go over that again, but happy to if there are any questions. Page 8 gets into what we found as we conducted the RFI and RFP was that there are sort of, and this is our jargon, not the industry's, but sort of two groups of providers here, one being solutions providers and one being products. And we think of these in terms of products being your typical investment strategy, what you're used to seeing in the plan, and where we find a strategy that has these characteristics, we think would be appropriate for this allocation, great, it gives us what we want. As opposed to solutions providers, which kind of take a step back and allow the investment management firm to say, we can help you think about the problem. We can help you with our analytics and our tool set to construct a customized solution for what you're trying to do here. And with that solution, then, it's going to be really tailored to what you want. And in that respect, the benchmarking and the investment strategy kinds of things are important, but almost somewhat secondary. And so we liked that because we are trying to do something new here. And so we looked at it and we said it might be a nice way of combining a solutions provider with product providers. And so what you're going to be hearing today is Insight as that solutions provider, what they can do for their customization and optimization for us, and then layering in DFA and SIT as product providers and what they offer in terms of specific risk return characteristics that can help bolster this. The bottom of page 8 highlights three advantages, the first being efficiency. We want to be very cognizant of the cash flows across the managers and reducing operational burden on staff. And so we knew that there's going to be some cash flow coordination. Insight's capabilities here will help minimize that burden on staff. Robustness is not only robustness in terms of the platform that we're creating, but also redundancy. And having three managers in the lineup is helpful because if, for whatever unforeseen reason, we would have an issue with any of the three, we have a game plan in place of how each could be replaced and the portfolio be maintained with stability. And then flexibility, just we want something that can adapt to the needs of the plan over time. So looking into the future and hopefully anticipating those. Page 9 highlights a few of the drawbacks. We have a dependency on the solutions manager. Insight is carrying an important part of this work. If we did have any reason with Insight into the future and we had to replace them, then there would be a burden on staff. There would probably be a burden on us as your consultant, too, to fix that, and then we'd obviously go through a search process to find an interim or find a long-term solution. An interim solution would probably be relying more heavily on DFA and or SIT in some combination, or even your custodian, because thinking of these as short-term bonds and easier to manage, they could very much sit within the custodial separate account and continue on maturing there. Non-traditional performance metrics is the second bullet point here. We think that because of the customization that we're trying to do here and the goals of the liquidity program, we want to set up performance metrics around that because it's what we're trying to achieve. So again, typical risk return over time periods is relevant, and we'll continue capturing that. But really what we're trying to do here is match cash flows. So let's create the metrics to monitor that and make sure we're paying attention to it. So a little bit of work to be done there. Potential drawback cost. As Tim mentioned, it's actually a lower cost solution than where you're coming from. It's probably not the lowest cost solution we could find. I think we have very competitive bids from the providers, and I think blended that 9 basis points comes in low. Could it be done for less? Yes, but you'd be giving up some of the trade-offs in terms of the customization that they're providing, in terms of the solutions that they're providing. So just recognizing that we're not trying to get the lowest cost solution, we're trying to get smart value for the plan. Now, page 10, I think, is a neat graphic that highlights this concept of what we're trying to do. And the graphic here shows this top red line. And that red line is basically the benefit payments. And so as we think about where we are today on the left-hand side, September 2016, and we're going over the next 4 or 5 years, we expect those benefit payments to continue and increase. And so how do we meet those benefit payments? Well, a bit of a building block approach. Starting at the bottom, we have Manager C. So let's think of that as the SIT strategy. The SIT strategy, we're anticipating a portfolio that generates yield, and we'll see that that's about 2% yield. We want that portfolio to continue generating that 2% yield, and that 2% will flow into the cash available to pay benefit payments, and that's what that represents. The next portion up, the darker blue, Manager B, is DFA. So DFA's allocation will actually be generating more of the cash flow here through their strategy, which we'll be hearing about. But they'll basically be saying, okay, we can provide you X million. So we're thinking of this as a $35 million monthly payment. We'll provide you with X of that number to be more precisely engineered. But they'll just do that through selling a portion of the portfolio every month and drawing it down. And then every year when it's replenished, they'll reinvest and continue on that path. And then the next shade of blue, the biggest piece here, Manager A, is Insight, where we would anticipate they then need to fill the gap between what SIT and DFA provide and what the benefit payment is actually to be. And they're going to do this in a combination of ways, the first being a buy and maintain strategy with their portfolio, where the bonds will naturally mature. And as they mature, great, we'll have cash available, and also through the management of cash itself, and so keeping a cash buffer there so that we can have the rest to fill in the gap. So it gives us a little bit of a cushion, and smartly managing that will help us keep assets employed in the fixed income markets generating yield, and then appropriately managing to the benefit payment stream.
Ed, just a quick question on cash. Yeah. In distant times, you used to be able to go to a money market fund, and it was called equivalent to cash and converted daily on a dollar per unit basis, share basis. That now no longer produces any revenue. When we talk about holding cash, are we talking about money sitting in a checking account or something like that earning no return, or is it in fact invested in something a very short duration?
It's essentially earning no return in today's interest rate environment. And it's basically the cash vehicle with the custodian that is daily liquidity and able to be used to pay benefit payments and expenses on a moment's notice. We try to minimize that because it is generating 0% return. And so looking at it and saying, how can we do that better is a key part of this, because this portfolio then, while highly liquid, while very safe in terms of quality rating, while very short duration, like a money market fund, is still able to generate a nice 2% yield thereabouts. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Just to follow up on that, do we pay fees for those cash holdings?
With the bank?
The ones that are earning essentially nothing.
You're probably actually getting some credit to offset other banking expenses is how it typically works, but I don't know the exact numbers. I haven't seen the statements.
I can follow, Henry, you and I can check that down. As you might imagine, the custodial banking relationship is full of cross subsidies there. To actually isolate that number, I'd want to take a look at it, but yeah.
Just a question.
Essentially, we're using the short-term investment fund, or STIF fund, that we use currently for the cash holdings of all of our separate account managers. We're saying we're not proposing bringing anything new in. We want to use that. And actually, we've got a 1% target position on that, which is about a $75 million position. So we have it today. We're not anticipating ramping that up dramatically. We're just using it with another manager here.
So if we turn ahead to page 11, the managers themselves, and they're here in the room with us, which I think is a nice way of presenting so that this is a collaborative effort to build this program. Page 11 just has some of the high-level characteristics of each of the firms. Insight, as we mentioned, they're headquartered in New York, wholly owned subsidiary of BNY Mellon. Insight itself is a UK company. And they went through an acquisition at the end of 2014, beginning of 2015, where they acquired Cutwater, a fixed income manager that was folded into Insight. So you'll see that a lot of the biographies have ties back to the Cutwater days, and the team's been around together for some time, which is nice. So here we have firm inception from 2002. And then assets, description of the portfolio, I think we touched on. Short duration assets, $76 billion, so certainly a large player here. Key investment professionals, Jesse, the first one listed here, PM, is going to be presenting to you momentarily. And then their fee schedule. DFA out of Austin, Texas is their headquarters, formerly in Santa Monica, and they still have a presence in Santa Monica. Privately owned, and probably a firm that you're familiar with, certainly has been around for a while using their quantitative strategies, originally, I guess, in this small cap domestic equity space. But their quant strategies have become certainly appropriate across other asset classes as well. So lots of experience there. You're going to be hearing from David as well, from DFA, and their fee structure. SIT is based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So this is more of a smaller firm. You're going to see here firm assets at a $14.7 billion, but have been around for quite some time, since 1981. And about $11 billion of that, or 10.6, is in fixed income, the rest in equity. So this is interesting because typically when we think of fixed income managers and strategies like that, we tend to think of the real big gorillas because it's a bit of a scale game, because of expertise and attracting resources and all those kinds of things. And they stand out as being not like the other two. But I think you're going to hear from them that they offer a differentiated strategy. And the strategy is compelling because they're still investing in very high quality bonds with short duration, but they're focusing on a particular niche that is generating that incremental yield that we think is pretty neat. Now, we also looked at it and said, okay, well, if it's not one of the big gorillas in the room, what are our risks with that? And we came to the conclusion, well, look, the team has been around for a long time, and they've stayed around together, so we don't have any fear there that there's any organizational disruption, so that's good. But worst comes to worst, what happens with the portfolio if something did happen, and those would be allowed to mature, basically. Those bonds would just be allowed to continue to run as we find another manager or something. So that one, I think, is one that looks a little bit different, but I think we got a lot of comfort based on the investment strategy and the holdings and the team's stability over time.
Before you flip off that page, and I'm sorry, John.
Oh, go ahead.
I think you may have already slipped an answer into my question. Have you run any pro formas that kind of suggest what this will come out to as an overall rate? I think I heard you say blended 9 basis points. Is that what I'm hearing?
9 basis points, yes.
Okay, so, sorry.
Okay. Yep. Just confirmation on the SIT bonds. They're basically mortgage-backed bonds,
yes.
As contrasted to the broad range of corporate treasuries, et cetera, et cetera.
Correct. Glad I didn't have a very long question.
Government guaranteed mortgage backs that are heavily seasoned. So they're well into their payment cycle.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
The advantage there being if somebody was going to refi out, they would have done it by now. And so they tend to pay a higher rate. These are not California mortgages. And they'll touch base on that.
How much other money do we have managed by subsidiaries of BNY?
Singular Guff would be the primary relationship there.
Pureford, too?
No, Pureford is owned by BMO. I believe Singular Guff is the only subsidiary currently of BNY Mellon. And Chi-Chi, what's our aggregate commitments across BNY Mellon? I mean, across the Singular Guff?
$200 to $300 million.
And we did a $200 million commitment to the private equity, and then we've done a couple of the real estate funds. So, yeah, probably in that $300 million range. Not drawn by a long shot, but committed. Yeah.
Do you want us to do additional research on that to nail that down, or are you comfortable with that?
We can get that number.
Okay. BNY owns 10% of Singular Guff, I believe. And they are not active investors. They don't vote. They don't manage the firm.
That's different.
Yeah. Yeah. When we say subs, they're right. You know, not wholly owned.
10% interest doesn't concern me as much as, you know, wholly owned.
Yeah.
On page 12, we get into the strategies a little bit for each of the three managers. I'll just touch on these briefly because they're going to be here and present, and respect your time for sure. On page 12 in the lower right-hand corner, one thing I wanted to highlight there was the characteristics of the portfolio. Average credit quality, AA+. This is just the insight portion. Yield of 1.2% and a duration of 1.25 years, so keeping it shorter, and which makes sense probably as you're thinking about them meeting the cash flow. The third bullet point down, we have process. In the last sentence of that paragraph says the optimization model, capturing cash flow against liabilities to design the complete solution, was really a compelling part of the story there. Their optimization model that they showed us allows them to model out the cash flows from the bonds in their portfolio against the liability stream for a sample client that they showed us, and how they then tie in feeds from the other managers to incorporate that, and understanding what index those managers are trying to manage to, as well as what bonds they actually hold and when those mature. And we thought that was a really compelling optimization model in terms of what we're trying to accomplish here. So that was a nice piece there. And our recommended allocation to Insight would be 50% of the assets here. So 50% of the liquidity assets. Page 13 has this brief summary on DFA. Characteristics in the lower right-hand corner here. Slightly lower average credit quality of A with a 1.7% yield and a duration of 2.76 years. So taking a little bit more risk, going out a little bit longer in terms of our 1 to 4 year or 0 to 4 year time frame. These would be the assets that kind of sit out there a little bit longer. You also see the high credit quality in the lower left-hand corner, that they have 12% in AAA, 20% in AA, and then some exposure to the A, and BBB, 39%. So they're getting more risk exposure across the corporate spectrum. The SIT overview on page 14, lower right-hand corner here, the characteristics showing it as AAA, and generating the 2.1% yield. So as compared to the previous two strategies, you can see how that kind of stands out. Wow, so AAA quality, but still getting that kind of yield, that's compelling. Slightly longer duration as well, 2.5 years. And as Tim mentioned, these are seasoned mortgages that we expect to continue and not prepay. And historically, they have not demonstrated prepayment acceleration. Page 15 then takes these three strategies and puts them together. And so page 15, we have the trailing years, and we just go DFA, Insight, and SIT, and then the next is the allocation that we're contemplating here, 50% to Insight, 25% to DFA, 25% to SIT, and you can see the trailing performance. Year-to-date, 2.3%, and then generally 2%, except for the 5 year at 1.97. And then the calendar year returns. You'll see that 2013 was the lowest year here. We actually had a negative return for SIT. Mm-hmm. The others remained positive. The total plan had a positive return in that year. Think about what happened in 2013. It was May of 2013 that we had the taper tantrum, and that was when the Fed announced that they were going to get out of the quantitative easing program. There was an immediate knee-jerk reaction by the fixed income market to say, whoa, rates are going up. And there was a big sell-off there in rates. And so rates then had an impact on the mortgage piece. But again, I'll let the experts from SIT explain how that happened, if you have any questions. But anyhow, the long story short here is that even in that challenging year, the portfolio still generated a positive return. And you know, that's the expectations that we see to get here. The fee analysis is on page 16. In the lower right-hand corner has the combined 9% blended, 9 basis points blended, 0.09%
with each of their schedules. Has that been committed? I mean, is that real? Or does that still have to be negotiated?
That has been negotiated.
Yeah.
It has been?
Yes.
We asked for their best final offers, and so...
So you've gotten... Okay.
We believe that to be real. It has to be papered, though. So
yeah. The documents
have to be signed. And then I think we can jump ahead to page 19, the liquidity portfolio characteristics. And so again, combining these three in this way, what does our overall program look like? Looks like a AA rated portfolio with a 1.5% yield, about a 2-year duration, which kind of fits in nicely with what we're thinking about of 0 to 4 years, so 2 years is the midpoint. You're seeing in the lower left-hand corner the credit quality, 68% is in double or triple A rated paper, so that's nice. Right above that in terms of the sector allocation, 23% is government related if we count the 13 in treasuries and the 10% in government related and agency. Then 41% in corporates and 24% in mortgage-backed securities. So high quality positioning there.
You had to associate a failure rate with triple B. What would you associate a failure rate with triple B? Do you understand? Like 5%, 10%? 3%, yeah. But what would it be?
It's a good question. I mean, there's a precise answer to that because the rating agencies put together transition matrices that say when you're in triple B, what percentage of those could be downgraded to double B, what percentage of those could be downgraded, dot, 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 dot. So you can do the math to actually calculate what's the probability of a triple A rated company or issuer going into default or getting downgraded to C or what have you. So there actually is a precise number that I could give you, but I don't know what that is. I'd have to look it up, do a little bit of math on it. I think what we're talking about here, though, is that the investment guidelines would likely be written in a way that something that gets downgraded has to be reviewed and decided what to do within the portfolio. So there may be a threshold of like 5% is tolerable, but beyond that, or if it's downgraded a number of grades, it has to be eliminated from the portfolio. Usually we would rely on the manager's expertise to say, yes, it was downgraded, but we think that that's incorrect for these reasons, and it makes sense to hold it, if not buy more, or yes, it was downgraded, this is surprise news, and we need to get it out of the portfolio.
And the triple B exposure exists within one portfolio here, so we can ask DFA what their strategy is, what their experience is around that. The other two portfolios don't have that exposure.
SIT's strategy is so that we don't totally ignore past history. I'm sure they'll be touching base on why I shouldn't be nervous when I see the expressions mortgage-backed security and AAA ratings in the same page. Mm-hmm. Seems to me I've been here before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
excellent.
What's new? So perhaps that's a better question for them to answer.
I'm willing to let them answer that.
Okay.
So that's a question to be asked.
That's right. I'm just giving you a little heads up.
Belinda.
Yes, I have a question about the allocation. Who decided the allocation, 50, 25, and 25, and what's the reason behind that allocation?
That was a collaborative discussion. We tried out various iterations. I think it was a combination of we knew we had relatively product-centric approaches and a solution-centric approach and said, well, the solution-centric approach is going to need a bigger pool of assets to work with here to backfill, to do the completion on And we played around with different iterations here of trying to find enough exposure from the products to contribute to the bottom line, either in terms of downside risk protection, yield enhancement, that sort of thing. Those were really the two primary metrics we were looking at there. We will try to be very careful about not falling into the trap of engineering a return profile, because return profile is a secondary consideration here. Completion of the mission is making the benefit payment is the measure of success in this program. So we didn't want to try to reverse engineer additional yield into here at the expense of adding risk. So we played around with different iterations. In the end, a 50-25-25 got us to where we thought was a nice balance between downside risk mitigation and a positive yield, and allowed us, and we took a look at what each firm brought to the table in terms of the strategy and the differentiation there, and we wanted to have them be big enough to, big enough to contribute, not so big to dominate the risk profile here. And that was, that's the long and the short of it, really.
So basically, the allocation decision comes from between staff and the consultant.
Yes.
We actually modeled a lot. So this was kind of in that process of doing the RFP and doing the due diligence and creating this program. We modeled a lot of different combinations, more than just these three managers,
yeah,
and more than just these three weights, to come up with that. And we had a lot of back and forth in terms of what are the goals. This one has too heavy of allocation to triple B or something like that. This one has too high a duration. This one comes out high on the cost end of things. So we kept iterating and iterating and iterating on that to come up with this solution. So I think it was pretty good.
With our barbell concept, this is the first time I'm recalling that we really have fairly hard numbers on the short end at 1.5% against and what, $1.7 billion of our monies versus a 7% overall. Are you still comfortable that the likelihood is at least, I think was it 53% the probability that that our portfolio as a whole would meet our 7% test? Are we still on track for that, given this process that has taken us to today?
That's a great question.
Short answer, yes.
Thank you. Moving right along.
you will see more higher return investment coming in the next couple meetings.
Yeah. Okay. So. But hearkening back to the asset allocation work, and I think that's what Ed's pulling up now, the capital market assumptions that were assigned to this portion of the portfolio were for the Barclays Short-Term Government Credit Index, which is the which is similar to the index shown here, the 1-3 year government credit index. We expected this to be a very low returning segment of the portfolio. Part of the reason we were okay with that is we also have very low return assumptions. I think we would share Verisk's very low return assumptions for even core bonds from this point going forward, given the yield compression there. So if we're not going to get paid to go out on the duration, let's at least get the safety in the portfolio. Understanding the opportunity cost of that, and I think the opportunity cost, with, you know, we fully recognize that going in, and it was that, as you say, that barbell approach. We have a big slug of highly safe but low-returning assets that will make our benefit payments. We have the flexibility then to go out and deploy into higher-returning asset classes that Gigi touched on.
Okay. And now I'd like to contradict.
Fair enough.
No. The way we modeled this piece of the portfolio was an assumed 10-year rate of 2.5%. So we often run into this issue of, so our current low interest rate environment is showing us below 2.5. Long-term 10-year number, we're showing a 2.5. So that's kind of indicative that we would expect the interest rates to start increasing at some point over 10 years, generate 2.5, currently looking at something that's probably below that. So it's puts a strain on the hitting the target number, I guess, in that respect. But
The period since 08, of course, has been horrendous.
Yeah.
And I think most that sort of follow the macro market predicted, certainly is my sense, almost annually that rates had to go up And of course, they've only gone down. Yeah. And once you get into a negative world, it's unlimited on down.
Right.
So it seems reasonable to me, but obviously we've had sort of a long history, recent long history, of that not occurring. I just want to know if it changed in your process of getting to today.
Yeah.
Did anything change from what we have talked about at some length, and I think very thoughtfully?
And that's a great question. I think we were pleasantly surprised with what we found through the process. I know my staff was. In terms of the managers we identified, in terms of the structures we identified, in terms of the type of risk factors we could put into the portfolio at the right price. As you say, when the rates keep going down and down and down, the expectation is for them to rebound. And I certainly think the probability of higher rates over the next 5 to 10 years are higher than the probability of lower rates. Can the rates go lower? Sure. They can go negative. Well, negative rates imply a whole host of other issues for a pension fund. We'll have bigger fish to fry. We'll have more fish to fry at that point in time.
No,
I think my view of this is, say, there's a higher likelihood of rising rates over the next 5 to 10 years, at which point having a lower duration will offer some protection there. These are managers that have been able to deliver excess returns over that short duration benchmark through differentiated means. I'm pretty comfortable with this solution.
Year to date, the combined three in this way has generated 2.3% through the first 6 months. That's almost shocking, really. And their 1 year number is 2.66. So recent history has it actually exceeding the 2.5 we would expect. Those are gross of fees, so take out the 9 basis points and pretty close.
You know, when I started reading this, I'm thinking, well, which one of these three am I going to choose?
Yeah. Okay.
I'm reading, and then I get to the end of it, and I see, we got all three
of
maybe here.
All the above.
And then the next thing that hit my head was diversification. I mean, one of the first things I learned about public funds is diversification. And so in this sector, having that diversification that you're presenting is I think, good. I'm hopeful that these three firms that you have chosen to present and that are going to be presenting will meet the goals.
Yeah, and this is different than what we've done in the past. We've talked about kind of getting away from that selection process and coming to more of a final solution. This is a complete solution that we're bringing to you here. There was 12 firms that responded to the RFP. We took a very close look at most of those firms, including conference calls, extensive due diligence, on-sites. My staff was on the road from late June through mid-July, as was Ed, meeting with these folks, as Ed said, testing out different mixes here, firms that were existing managers, firms that would be new managers for us. So I think what we've come to the solution, we feel, and it took a long time to get everything fine-tuned here, and you can imagine the meeting of the minds. There's a lot of smart people throwing some thoughts into this mix. My staff, Ed and I, well.
There are quite a few. There are some smart people.
I got it.
When I'm putting this forward, this is my comfort position to the board saying, this is the best I can find.
Mm-hmm.
This is the best we all agree upon. And I think it's a very interesting combination of strategies.
Mm-hmm.
Princeton is higher than the Harvard now. I think it just got a little higher.
In what?
How long of a relationship are we looking at? I mean, we're going with this. We're going to see how it goes over the next 3 years, 5 years, or...
Yeah, we tend to hire it with the hope of it's in perpetuity, but we're reviewing it every quarter. This will be something, money will be flowing through the system every month. You'll be getting a report card every month. Are things working as expected? We had a $36 million benefit payment. The bonds matured and threw off $36.2 million. Okay, great. I saw those two match. We had expectations. We tested them. It flowed over. Everything worked as expected. And we can make tweaks and iterations along the way. And we should expect some tweaks along the way to fine-tune the program. But the idea would be these would be very, very long-term relationships.
Unless one happens to have issues that we need to read.
Correct.
Okay.
When and if we have that situation, which we all recognize is the reality of this business that we're in, these are all going to be separate accounts. These are all going to be high-quality bonds. We'll be able to reassign these basically on an overnight basis. So we retain that complete control over who's running the money, but we would hope that these are very, very long-term relationships. If anyone disappoints us, we take swift action.
Unfortunately, we have experience.
We have experience
doing
that.
So, I think that you did present as we're on the board that this is going to be a learning process as well. We will be tweaking it as we go since it's so new.
Belinda.
I understand the managers will make presentation later on, but I would like to hear from the consultant and the staff that when we talk about the two products managers, SIT and the DFA, if you look at their portfolio characteristics, and the SIT has a slightly shorter duration, better credit, but their yield is higher consistently than the counterpart DFA. So that means when staff and consultant recommended DFA also to be included here, that must be reasons.
Yes.
So I would like to hear the reasons.
Sure. You know, I think every firm is going to come with its own set of strengths and challenges. And we take a look at something like a DFA, and we said, first of all, you know, one of the qualifying elements that we didn't touch on is they had to understand our programmatic goals. Whether they were offering a product or solution, we needed firms who understood what we were trying to accomplish here. And we had a handful of firms who really, truly got it. All three of these firms got it. So even when they're offering products, they understand what we're trying to build here. And they've agreed to be team players in advance. So when we took a look at DFA, what was interesting there was they run this with a quantitative strategy, and basically they become somewhat agnostic about the individual credits that they buy and sell, so they're able to almost create additional liquidity in the marketplace when they need to sell. So if something is not trading well, they can move to the next bond because they're looking to express a behavior using the bonds as proxies of their outcomes rather than saying, I can't sell the GE bond because I really need that for something else. And maybe I'll take a look at this other corporate debt here. They're taking a look at behaviors. What's it trading like? Is there a good liquid component on their side? So it's that ability to create some easier liquidation points that was compelling to us. That and the fact that it was a quantitative strategy, these tend to work at a little bit different cycle than fundamental strategies. So we like that combination. That's typically been something that's worked for us in the past. And I would say with SIT and DFA, understand that we're going to fine-tune their portfolio characteristics. These are examples of the most applicable strategy, but there's going to be some fine-tuning that goes on behind the scenes before we get these up and running. And with SIT, you know, when we like the fact that they're exploiting kind of a niche strategy within the bond market that's difficult to access simply because these, you think about it, these are big bond positions when they're issued and they run off over 10 or 15 years and you've had the prepayments, there's not a lot left over. So you got to buy a lot of these to build a large portfolio. So it's difficult from that perspective. But we also look at the mitigating factor. It's a smaller team. It's a smaller firm. We wanted to be cognizant of not putting too many eggs in one basket here. So having the fail safes was important to us as well. So we thought those two in combination with the insight strategy made the most sense to us.
And there's been a lot of questions on the composition of, you know, the 50, 25, 25. You know, Jerry Tellis mentioned, oh, I'm reading through it. Which one should I pick? You know, when we look at the liquidity sub-portfolio, I think, you know, it's important to remind the board about, you know, such a large piece of our portfolio is the liquidity part. And, you know, not taking on that additional manager risk and putting all of our eggs in one basket. And I think that, you know, in the analysis and the review of the respondents to the RFP, I think that that was something that staff kept and the consultant kept in mind as well, is taking a look at, okay, what is really best for Sisera? You know, do we lack confidence that anyone at one of the three could take on 24% of our portfolio? You know, we're probably, there's some comfort there probably, but, you know, taking into consideration all factors, what's really going to work best for Sisera and what's the most prudent thing that we can do. And we landed on the three manager.
We knew this was going to, given the size, we knew it was going to be a multi-manager structure. It was just finding the right structure.
Any further questions of Tim and Ed? Are you ready to have the individual firms make presentations?
Yeah, and we're going to do this a little bit differently. The fact that we're coming to you with a complete grouping of three managers, we thought it doesn't make sense to hear from them individually. They need to work together. You should probably hear from them together. So we're going to do this as a panel discussion. There's going to be one or two representatives from each firm up here. They're going to give a little intro about themselves, talk about their strategy, talk about how they propose to work together, and feel free to ask questions of them. And we're going to offer a Q&A session at the end of that as well. But feel free to ping them with as many questions as you need to along the way here.
Do they know about the swimsuit competition?
Jerry, we've eliminated that. Yeah.
You thought tank tops and dolphin shorts, man. We didn't go that far, Jerry.
Last time it didn't work out well.
Jerry's always a little more edgy than the rest of us anyway.
Thank you.